Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 18th of November. It is Wednesday, otherwise known as Hump Day in some quarters, and whatever that means, get through it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It is our roundtable panel. Let me introduce the group to you, and then we will certainly welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. As you say, it's that day of the week when you go from one side to the other.
Yep. It's in so many ways. It's the halfway point. University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is back. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
We missed you. We had a lot of good stories to talk about, and we missed you, so we have to catch up with you.
Okay. I can do that.
At some point, maybe even during the break, I'll just say, Charlie Sheen to you and let you go nuts.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Boy, okay. did I get rapped for what I said yesterday.
I didn't listen. All right, we'll catch up.
Okay, we'll catch up. And corporate attorney Rich Honan is here with us. Hello, sir.
Hello, good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Nice to be here. Nice to have you a part of our proceedings. All right, let us go to the topics at hand. Of course, the big story is the raid that took place overnight in outside of Paris, from my understanding, not very far from the stadium where one of the bombings on Friday night was pretty much a failure at the stadium. But the French police stormed an apartment in the heart of the northern Paris suburb before dawn on Wednesday in an attempt to find the Belgian man suspected of orchestrating the Paris terrorist attacks. Two people died in the raid, including a young woman who detonated an explosive vest. Seven people were arrested. It was not clear if the suspect was there. It is currently impossible to give you the identities of the people who were arrested, which are being verified, according to the Paris prosecutor, who was talking to reporters after the raid. Everything will be done to determine who is who. The raid began around 4:15 Paris time when special forces, backed by truckloads of soldiers, cordoned off an area near the main square in the town, not far from the stadium where three attackers blew themselves up on Friday. Inside the apartment on the third floor of a building, at least five suspects were holed up. One of them, the woman, opened fire and then killed herself. A man, another terrorist, according to police, died from a combination of gunfire and the detonation of a grenade. That is what we know as of right now, and obviously this is a constantly changing story.
Yeah, you're all looking at me. I really don't know what to say. I'm glad the French police are going after these guys, that they have leads to follow up on. This isn't the end of it. Jump in here at any time. Where do you want to take this conversation?
Well, it's just good to know that our president is falling all over himself to close Guantanamo, because I think that's the important thing to do in this situation, right?
Oh, come on. Here we go. He should have closed it when he first came into office, as he promised, and you wouldn't have a chance to say that.
Okay, so what are...
So, in other words, you're
being passive aggressive. So what's the?
No, I'm being aggressive. Aggressive.
Yeah, no, he's being aggressive.
I agree with Rosemary. Obviously, you know, they're doing everything they can, and they should do everything they can, and they will continue to. And we remain, and our president remains focused on what?
Our president, as far as I can see, has said over and over again, and has reiterated this several times, including the latest public speech that he made yesterday, which was that he feels that the policy that is currently in place is the right policy.
And what policy is that again?
In working on targeted attacks versus putting boots on the ground and going into a full-scale military operation, and to think about it as opposed to a knee-jerk response.
And it has worked. He was right in saying the other day that ISIS has been contained.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was right.
Go ahead.
He was right in saying, and he took a lot of flack from it. You're about to lay on some more, that it has been, ISIS has been contained very much in Iraq and in Syria. So ISIS now, because it's a smart movement, even though they're very brutal, they are using violence in a very very methodical and smart way. They have now switched to international terrorism. That's why you're seeing what's happening in Paris, and you may see it in other places. His policy did work there. Now he has to have a new switch in tactics to match what he's done, what they are doing.
I think it's delusional to say that his policy – first of all, it's delusional to call what he's doing a policy because he's done nothing except –
Working with the French government?
Since the attacks?
Why would you say not? He has worked very hard not to put American troops on the ground in the Middle East, which
is smart. He's the only leader in the world who thinks that we can somehow make some progress without, as everybody loves to say, boots on the ground.
Okay, Rich.
No one else, including people in his cabinet, agrees with him on that.
Let me make sure that I get this straight. Rich, you are calling for boots on the ground.
Yes.
Okay.
Troops, and where would you put them, and what would you have them do?
I would have an international coalition.
He's in favor of that. He's been calling for that for years.
But it would be an international. No, he hasn't.
Yes, he has. Starting with his first threat to go into Syria, he wanted congressional approval, and they didn't want to give it to him then, which is interesting now.
Rosemary, that is such revisionist history.
No, it is not, Rich.
Look, in 2000. Look, when does the Syrian war start? I'm going to say
about 5 years ago.
I was going to say March of say 2011. I'll say maybe earlier. I'll say that's when I think it became kind of generally aware. So that's March of 2011.
The mass exodus of refugees started in early March of 2012.
Yeah,
like 2011.
Right, and ISIS, really and this group that we now call ISIS becomes at least to our becomes known to us. I'll say around August of 2011. And the whole time, Obama's saying, this is a red line and Assad has to go and all these things. And when he went and got congressional approval, it was when he actually walked out of that conference on a Saturday when he was supposed to be making a decision. He said, well, now I'm going to go back to Congress. And it turned out a red line did not mean a red line. And it turned out that Putin then became the big peacemaker. And Putin, Assad, and now Iran have become the big decision makers in the Middle East.
As well, they should be. They're the big players in the Middle East. The day is over when the United States can say this is how it's going to be and make it happen.
I disagree with you.
You can call for an international coalition, but that somehow excludes Putin and Iran, who are the big players there?
But I do not believe that the international coalition should be led by parties other than the United States, or the United States should have such a backseat in it.
Did President Obama in 2013 call for a military strike in Syria?
He did, after he drew, as Rich said, the red sign, red
the red line,
line
in the sand.
They went over it. There was a provocation, and there should have been an attack.
And then he changed his course.
He went into Congress, and Congress said no, so he didn't. Postponed
the military strike against the Syrian
government.
Which
is also right that most people are more hawkish about that, including Hillary Clinton would have measured for it. But there's no sign that giving in to the provocation of ISIS for a world war is going to solve anything. It's going to make it better.
Actually, fighting them is going to make it better than capitulating.
All right. I just want to read an article from August 31st, 2013. In one of the riskiest gambles of his presidency, Mr. Obama effectively dared lawmakers to either stand by him or, as he put it, allow President al-Assad of Syria to get away with murdering children with unconventional weapons. By asking them to take a stand, Mr. Obama tried to break out of the isolation of the last week as he confronted taking action without the support of the United Nations, Congress, the public, or Britain, a usually reliable partner in such international operations.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying that we should have. I'm not saying at that point that we should have made war on Assad. All right. Look, the first stupid thing, as I said at the time, Joe, was if you're president, you don't call a red line and then not mean it. And that was one of the big lies that he told. That was a red line. The other red line, by the way.
How many lines in the sand did we have with George Bush and the Gulf War?
One.
The first George Bush made.
Yes. They had one line in the sand. They crossed it, and we went in.
I think that whole line in the sand and threats and all that is old-fashioned governance.
Because there's still diplomacy.
Yeah, there's still diplomacy. And what's wrong with the president saying, you know what, that line, no, that's not the right thing. There was a lot of doubt at the time that it was gas used on civilians, and that was the red line in the sand. There was a lot of doubt and remains a lot of doubt about whether that really came from Assad. There's some thought that some of the crazy rebel groups, which would be our allies in this movement, had done it themselves.
Rosemary, you're using the Obama tactic of arguing something that nobody is arguing and isn't relevant. I'm not arguing whether they used, who used chemical gas or whether. What I'm saying is when you're the president and you're dealing with an area of the world that depends on projected power, you can't make threats, you can't make statements, and then abjectly refuse to back them up.
Well, that's exactly what I am arguing, that I think he can. Yes, he did not make a good impression.
And he did, and this is what we
have. He didn't make a good impression in the Middle East. So what? Like, they had such a good impression before?
All right. Let me go to Alan here on his thoughts of this. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll get to a lot of letters, which, by the way, we're just going to start forwarding to your email, Rich.
Well, I would say.
in what will be Rich's final appearance on our program.
Not because of us. We love having him here.
Yeah, so, we love it.
So, Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, I just think that anybody who starts talking about putting boots in the ground after everything we know about boots on the ground is just mistaken. We don't want our kids coming back dead. And it really is that simple. This president has really shown a tremendous amount of courage in saying, no, we're not going to do it. And believe me, it is true that he has cabinet members and he's got Hillary who's worried about losing in a primary or winning in a primary. I don't know. But I so admire the man. Really do.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get some letters and we'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from the Odyssey Bookshop, hosting a potluck with recipe samples from Soup for Syria and a conversation with Omar Dahi and Michelle Mauchebeck Thursday at 7 p.m. OdysseyBKS.com. Baba Louie's, Pittsfield, Great Barrington, and Hudson, New York, featuring Lasagna Night every Monday with salad and a basket of bread. BabaLouie'sPizza.com. And Barley, Hops, and Grapes, Red Hook, a home brewing and winemaking supply store featuring beer and wine-themed gifts for holidays and gift cards. BarleyHopsAndGrapes.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Let us go to some letters, and then we'll get the latest news from the BBC at the bottom of the hour to find out what is happening in Paris. And
okay, here it comes.
Well, no, actually, you got one. The first one is from Daniel. He says, "Nature abhors a vacuum, and our president's last name should be Hoover." In other words, sort of do nothing. Okay, so Michael says, "When Rich's son comes home in a box, I think he'll be whistling a different tune." That's terrible.
Okay, low blow.
Yeah, that's not
I
right.
I wouldn't even say that.
And Lynn says, "Goodness, he really is a Republican. He just interrupts and shouts louder than anyone else. Here's my question to him. Everybody's on the same thing. Would you send your children or other family members, depending on their ages, to fight? Yes or no?"
If my son wanted to be in the military and wanted to fight, of course he would.
What if he didn't want to be in the military and wanted
to? I wouldn't want him in the military.
The answer to that is no. No one would willingly send their children into war. Sometimes you got to do it. You don't want to. You do it anyway. That's like the commander-in-chief doesn't want to send in people. That's just a fake argument.
Here's another one for you, Rich. Dear Roundtable, I know Rosemary is only defending Obama because he is a Democrat. But if she was able to view this with a more open mind, she'd clearly see that Obama has shown a serious lack of leadership when it comes to dealing with ISIS. And Jay says, "Boots on the ground, the army is exhausted and near broken. When can we expect Rich to enlist?" And Julia says, "So Rich, let's get the record straight. Do you believe in regime change? Do you believe we were right to go into Iraq and topple Saddam?"
Wait, what about the regime change that Obama engineered in Egypt? What about the regime change engineered in
Two wrongs. Yes or no? Answer the question. The witness will answer the question from truth.
Is the question, do I believe in regime change?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
As does Obama, as do all the Democrats, as do a lot of the Republicans. It's just that he seems to get all the regimes backwards that he tries to change. He takes stable governments like Egypt and tries to change them.
That was Arab Spring that changed the Egyptian regime. And then he helped or stood by at least while the army went back in.
He called for Mubarak's ouster.
When the people revolt against it, what were you going to do? Stay with this communistic, total, absolute, horrible ruler? Yeah, that's the way to win the hearts and mind of Arab people.
I'll say this to you and to Alan and to all the listeners. There are two types of leaders in the Middle East, okay? There are murderous tyrants who kill their own people and who hate the United States, and there's murderous tyrants who kill their own people and can work with the United States. Those are the two choices.
Could I hear from some of our listeners who are not racist and anti-Arab? It is not true that democracy cannot run in the Middle East simply because
I'm not talking about democracy. I'm not convinced that we should be pushing democracy in the Middle East. I'm saying there's two types of leaders.
No, I heard
and,
you.
And you people are looking for a type of leader that does not exist there.
All right. Pause that, and there's plenty of time for your outrage. We're going to take a break, and then we'll inflame. We'll ban the flames.
I need my megaphone.
To the roundtable at WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Wednesday. It has been spirited so far. We have many letters. We'll get to many of them, although we want to get back to the discussion as well. So let's get to a few letters. We'll give you an idea of the tenor of what we're getting, and then we'll go back to talk about some other topics that have to do with this issue.
Well, look, this is a terrific show so far. I just want to compliment everybody on this. Jack says, Mr. Honan is stunted by his ideology. He is not an asset to the roundtable. However, Joe, you have one that I didn't get. I want you to read it.
Let's see. I don't know that I have it now anymore.
Well, it said we have, with Rich being here, there's some hope for the roundtable in WAMC.
Let's see. They're coming in very, very fast. So I'm trying to get proud of Rich for holding his own this morning. Appreciate the lively and diverse discussion. What will be the line in the sand that we have to cross before we have to choose to act or react?
Okay, that's from Andy. Okay. And Fitzhugh says, about the character of Middle Eastern leaders, murderous tyrants that love or hate us, is so racist that I can't believe he uttered it on the air.
I agree.
This sort of generalization is part and parcel of the Republican mindset these days, and it's revolting. Must say, I don't love the new addition to the roundtable regulars. Well, I do, and I don't agree with the thing he says.
Name me the moderate Middle Eastern leaders.
What?
Name me
there
the
aren't any, but that doesn't mean, as you say, that there cannot be ever any. The people certainly want that.
There
just isn't the structure
to
put them in place now.
Well, how about Jordanians?
If you're
going to
do regime change, put it in there.
Jordanians, yes, no?
Closest to moderate, although I will say, if you see the way they treat dissent, it's not the way we treat it here. And Rosemary, I'm not saying it will never change.
You care the way they treat dissent. You care about Americans.
Really?
You're a journalism teacher, and
that doesn't bother you?
That what doesn't bother me?
The way in which they treat dissent by putting people in jail?
Of course it does, but we're talking about what bothers you.
What bothers me...
I think that the United States was right to back the fall of Mubarak for exactly that reason, the way he treated his people. There was no dissent. There was no opposing party.
And there is now?
No, there is not now. And the Arab Spring ousted them, and we should have been supporting the guy that they put in who made many mistakes. But he was elected. The way you get rid of a leader you don't like in a democracy is not to allow a coup. It's to keep him in and vote him out.
Alan, what are you gonna say?
I'm with Rich.
Didn't Obama support a coup? Didn't Obama and call for the ousting of Mubarak?
Yes, he did, and you just gave him credit for it.
Well, I don't give him credit. My problem is this whole thing where we keep getting supporting the wrong people, giving them weapons, and getting
it's impossible to pick. It's something.
Why would you march into Syria and Iraq right now? It is impossible.
Wait, I'm reading more now.
Hold on. You guys.
Okay. This is getting. Oh my gosh.
Okay, Andy says, proud of Rich for holding his own this morning. Appreciate the lively and diverse discussion. What will be the line in the sand that we have to cross before we choose to act or react? Thanks. So we heard that.
But anytime you want to say proud of Rich and repeat it, that's. I'm happy to hear that. You know, Rosemary, I'm not talking about marching in just to march in and just to be macho. I think we all agree. I'm going to say this. I think we all agree that the problem on the table, besides the terrorism problem, which you almost have to deal with kind of on a case by case, the problem on the table is the refugee crisis. And if we could make a somewhat more stable and somewhat more safe area back in Syria, that would be, I think we all agree, that fanciful though that might be, that would be the answer.
Absolutely.
And it might be that because of the warring factions, whether it's Assad, whether it's ISIS, whether it's the rebels, the moderate opposition, if we had an international coalition and we created, and I want to call it a safe haven, and I know that's optimistic.
I'm thinking Srebrenica, I should say that.
With boots on the ground.
We'd have
to. The only way to do it.
We'd have to.
Okay,
and have those people be able to go back to somewhere near their homes.
I think that would be fine, and you do that with diplomacy, Jim, as well as with boots on the ground. Jim, you have to negotiate it.
Jim in Montgomery says, panel, I may not agree with everything that Rich says, but he's great on the panel. Nonetheless, he offers a very coherent, conservative perspective that challenges the panel to think differently in contrast to the extremist Herb London and leads the discussion to new avenues. Please keep him on. Okay, we will. Rebecca says, I'm as liberal as they come, but I absolutely love having a loud, fierce Republican opinion on the roundtable.
This is like a commercial. I'm getting tired of it.
Oh, they love you, too.
I'm not a Republican.
They do. They do. And they always love it when you're outrageous. Philip says, I like the conservative addition to the roundtable. It makes for even more lively conversation. Well, I don't agree with Rich. He's intelligent. And Constantine says, the problem is that Western powers are picking the kind of leader, not mentioned the kind who runs the country without U.S. interference.
Good point. That's a good point.
Well,
Kim, we all agree that we're really bad at picking leaders of other countries.
Well, we're not so good at picking them in our own country.
I was going to say that. I was going to say that as well.
Okay.
That's true.
Cody says, it seems that the international community is a catch-22 involving ISIS. If the goal is to extirpate the organization, if that's even possible, then military intervention must be used since ISIS cannot be negotiated with. But military intervention simply fuels even more hatred for the West, thus growing and encouraging ISIS. The best solution is the denigration and defeat of ISIS by countries in the Middle East, not by European and American forces. So when's that going to happen is my question. George says, I like having a different voice on a roundtable, but Alan, please keep them in check. I can't. I keep trying. Joe does a terrific job of that. That's Joe's job.
No, he eggs us on. He likes it. Well, he's over there grinning and smirking.
I like watching the show. I got a front row seat.
Ethan says, I don't know the name of the gentleman who said, Rich, who said Obama supports the wrong regimes. I assumed he was speaking to the coup where we helped to topple the democratically elected Egypt. President Morsi. Egypt is now the most repressive government again under the military. Well, it is interesting that we went from one to the other, then back again.
And didn't Obama just refuse to? Did he refuse to meet with Sisi or to talk to him? Just recently, it was reported. It was on CNN, so it's not. I didn't get this from Fox News. So I don't know.
And Ashley says, this week the president said that, yes, we could send the troops on the ground and defeat ISIS. We have that military capability. Then said, if we don't also change the fundamental political dynamics there, we'll have to keep our boots on the ground there as a permanent occupying force without end. He said his strategy addresses striking at ISIS to degrade and ultimately defeat it while working at the same time to change the fundamental dynamics so there will be stability afterwards. And then he goes on. I think we agree with that.
Right?
Well, that was to your point that he has no policy. Intelligent letter writer saying you've missed his policy.
You're right. I did miss his policy.
Because your definition of leadership is like charge.
No, my definition of leadership is having a coherent policy.
You just heard it.
Before we came on, I said, good, I love having both of them here because I won't have to work too hard today. And sure enough, prophetic as
usual. Wind them up.
Prophetic as usual. And then Carl
says... We haven't
even
gotten into the Syrian refugees.
Oh, the refugees. Right? I can't wait for that.
Well, no,
I have a feeling we're on the different sides on that,
we may have
too.
To wait till tomorrow on that, but let's go.
Carl says, please consider using the name Daesh instead of ISIL or ISIS, as John Kerry and others have done. It is the group's an acronym in Arabic. It is also a homophone for sewers of discord. Sowers of discord, which implies enemies of Islam, so it is disparaging to the group. Okay.
Wait, disparaging to...
I don't...
It's sowers of discord, so in other words, ISIS does not represent Islam.
Oh, I think we all agree, right?
This is terminology. It's just what you're going to call the group.
But there's nobody who's making the correlation between ISIS and Islam. It's a perversion.
Many
people
do make that correlation.
All right.
So
important letter. Is there a chance that Rich can be less acerbic and more diplomatic in his criticism, something he might learn from Obama's approach? His condescending tone is really hard to take. Rosemary, breathe. A balanced conversation is important, however.
So let's just, I'll set this up, then we'll take a break, and then we'll talk about when we come back. But let's talk about of course, we mentioned this yesterday, about the Republican governors across the country very upset over the Syrian refugee policy. The president has defended it. He has said that it does not seem... that there is any way that we can have the American values that we all cherish and turn away people and put up barriers such as you have to be an orphan, you have to be Christian, you have to be a woman, you have to be this, you have to be that before we will allow you in. And then some of the Republican candidates who have been very outspoken on this issue have immediately said, you know, shut down the borders, don't let anybody in, and then have backtracked a little bit and have said, well, you know, it's who we let in, which... sort of the point, right? So I want to talk about that and what all of you think about it. So think about that. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Springbrook Oneonta, New York, supporting people of all ages with developmental disabilities, hosting the 3rd annual Gifts Unwrapped Community Art Show, December 3rd through December 11th, springbrookny.org. Gloversville Sewing Center, Gloversville and Saratoga Springs, New York. A quilt shop offering Bernina and Janome sewing machines, gloversvillesewingcenter.com, were worth the trip. And Binghamton University, conducting research on the effects of alcohol on the brain's development toward the understanding of addiction and its consequences, binghamton.edu.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Let me give everybody their introduction. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and even though many people are writing in that Rick is here, it's actually Rich, R-I-C-H, Rich Honan,
soon to be a household name in the Capital District.
They're asking
soon
for
to be
your
a
name
former
here.
Panelist no, on the roundtable.
No,
table,
no. But, okay.
So, that would be sad.
Rosemary? Okay, so I set it up. What do you think? This obviously has become a main issue in the Republican GOP contest for president, the GOP presidential contest as well.
I'm so interested that it's become a Democratic-Republican thing for the most part. Now, there are some opportunist Democrats who obviously go the other way, but it has – the Republican governors are saying, no, don't let them in. You're terrible, Obama. And the candidates for president, we're hearing incredible things like from Jeb Bush, who says, you know, know, what was the crazy thing he said? Christian, there should only be Christian Syrians. I mean, this is crazy. Oh, there's a lot of people calling and writing in and saying, send them all back to fight. Send them all back to fight. And sounds appealing, but, we did
send a seven-year-old back to fight?
Well, no, they're talking about the able-bodied men. That's what they're
We've been
me.
In this position before.
France.
Jews were flooding out of Europe in advance of the Nazis overtaking Germany, and we rejected them. We kept them out. We shut our borders. We did not let in these dangerous, terrible refugees because they might have been, filled with spies, whatever. And it was a horrible, terrible moment in American history, and here we are about to repeat it. I can't believe it. It's also very misinformed. Most of these refugees are children. They're not terrorists. And no one is saying don't screen them, don't figure out who's infiltrated, and we can do that. We have been screening immigrants since Ellis Island, over 100 years. There's a story in the Albany Times Union today looking at the mechanisms that we have and that we use to screen. We can do this right now. There's no need to delay it. Why would you delay it? They need to get out now. They're in danger now. We need to let in these people. I say fill up Detroit with them. And as for taking care of ourselves, what better way to help Social Security than to bring in able-bodied workers who are going to be putting money into the system. This is good for us and good for them, and it totally is in keeping with American values. I'm done.
Well, I don't understand a couple of things. It seems like this the president is putting this forward like this is somehow a response to the terrorist activity, and to me it's an issue that's somewhat off the core issue. I mean, the core issue is
I agree with you entirely, but I see that as the president responding to the Republican discord and the governor. I agree with you that it is certainly off the center of what we should be discussing and talking about, which is what we've been talking about at the beginning of this show. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that I don't think it's the president that's setting that course. I think it is the Republican candidates for president who are beating this drum, and also the many governors throughout this country who I believe don't want to pay for this and don't want to have the responsibility and are saying, okay, we're not going to do it.
Except for Ben Carson, who's not sure where Syria is.
Oh God, I want to get to that story.
Wow.
But go ahead.
All right. Well, first, I don't know that I don't agree with your facts on that one, because it was the president who decided to make this. So the president made this an issue, and the writer who talked about being condescending. No matter how condescending I may ever sound, I will never, ever come close to Barack Obama for condescension. When he is best in his element is when he's in
the president of the United States. He actually is better than all of us.
And I don't think he's condescending.
Yeah, I don't find him condescending.
When he is in his element, when he is in a foreign country slamming Americans, and he brought it up at the G20, and he brought it up again yesterday, I guess, in the Philippines, saying that.
But that's in response to what the call was here, the immediate call by Republican governors and by GOP presidential candidates of saying that we should not let this is because what they were saying was that this is you have a leader, you have a president of the United States who is allowed once the information came out that there was a Syrian refugee who was part of the attacks in Paris,
right.
Then that set those candidates off, and that became an issue, and he was responding to that.
Yeah, except that first of all, I don't know. I haven't heard anybody have a problem with – now, France has closed its borders. Nobody has a problem with that.
That's terrorism. That's not to keep out refugees. They have taken in many. So is Germany, which, by the way, has taken in many more thousands than we have and has managed not to worry about so far screening and all that. The worries we have been already taken care of by other countries. As for arrogance, Rich, come on. Is that worse? Is what Obama has done talking about these issues in foreign places worse than bringing in the Israeli leader to tell the president how he's so wrong? That was pretty arrogant, too, on the Republican side.
If you want to call them equally arrogant, that's fine. But I think the president, this president personally, is motivated by arrogance and
so you're the governor of New Hampshire. What would you say,
Joe? My first two questions would be okay, and I don't know the answers to this, but my first question would be, is what I've been told is that there's not consensus within the Obama administration as to things like screening procedures. And that lack of consensus comes from people like the head of Homeland Security. So I would like to get a little more visibility on that topic. That's the first thing. Second thing is, and I always try and vet everything in two places before I say it here. And I will say, I only heard this in one place, and it was from a Republican. Okay, so take it for what it's worth.
Great, big, giant grain of salt.
Okay. But what they said made some intuitive sense. And they said it costs 12 times more to bring a refugee from Syria to the United States rather than relocating that refugee to somewhere more in the region, as not an unsafe place, a safe. And the argument being that why would you not save 12 refugees for every one? Why is it important to travel these people here? And that's actually, there's a point to that, and we've discussed it here.
Jordan has taken in, and absolutely, it's overwhelmed its own economy, and we've not given them support. And I said that at first, before this got so acute and terrorism was tied in with it, we were saying on the program, yes, support Jordan, support the countries
like money
around
is
there.
The easiest thing to, and look, this is coming from a conservative, seems like money is the easiest type of support for us to give, and alleviates the moral issue we could discuss, but
well,
it alleviates some of those.
If it's so easy, aren't you arguing both sides of your mouth in saying, if it's so easy, if money's the easiest thing we can do, and then you say, well, it's too expensive to bring them over here. So
if you're allocating resources, mm-hmm, why would we go out of our way to do that when we could possibly, and again, I haven't vetted
this. I agree with that,
we could possibly help more people in a different way, mm-hmm, and not even argue at the moral issue, which I understand is an important issue. But why do we go out of our way to make this an issue when there's other ways of dealing with it?
Because, Rich, it is the fair thing to do when we are dealing with an international crisis, a terrible crisis like this, for everybody to do their share. And if the United States says, you know, we'll give you money, but you can't come here, but we expect the other places people to have to keep them, I think that's a whole other story. I don't like it.
I think what we say is the United States will give you money. You can come here. We are working on our vetting processes that have been called into question, and we'll work it through. And I have no problem with that. We're not going to stop you at the door.
That's fair. That's not what I'm hearing from
the
27.
Ship of fools. Right. It's not going to be that.
I'm not hearing that from the 27 governors. If I had heard that, I'd have a different argument. That seems pretty reasonable, actually.
Jeb Bush talks about being less bellicose and managing the crisis with vigilance and composure. Chris Christie is advocating a law and order approach. Donald Trump says bomb the blank out of them. Warnings that migrants crossing U.S. borders could be the great Trojan horse. Senator Ted Cruz said accepting Syrian refugees amounts to a roll of the dice with the safety of Americans, calling it lunacy.
And Brendan says, I think it's important that we look at this realistically. If we take 10,000 Syrian refugees into the country, there are going to be a handful of dangerous people mixed in. The question we should be asking is, should we do it anyway? I say yes. I think we have a moral responsibility to take that risk. Who's Brendan, you say? He's just the guy who wrote in, along with the 11,000 other emails we have gotten this morning. Unbelievable.
But actually, I think Rosemary and I have agreed on the
solution.
We've solved the problem.
A bipartisan solution here.
I thought you were both wrong.
What's next? Let's move to global warming.
The biggest threat in the world, even bigger than ISIS. I agree with the president on that.
Bobby Jindal.
You're quiet.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby Jindal is out.
I'm shocked.
Yes.
That's really going to change the dynamics of this race.
Pulling at 0.4%.
What happens to him now? What can he do now?
Well,
he can't
wait
be governor.
Is there a term limit on governor?
He's term limited out, I think, isn't he?
I don't know.
He didn't run.
Okay,
right.
Yeah. But he
was doing terribly as governor, and as far as polls are concerned. They were very unhappy with him in the second term, mostly because he was off around the world running to be president.
Yeah, I want to say one thing. When you hear somebody say, he shouldn't run this time, he should wait until next time, to run, it doesn't work that way. Right. You grab the golden ring while you can, and there are so many of these guys who say, okay, the next time I'll be there. But by the next time you're forgotten, you're gone, you're out.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't it so kind of serendipitous who catches on and who doesn't?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yes. If Bobby Jindal walked in right now, we'd probably say, all right, he's this, he's that, he's smart, he's not, whatever
he
is.
He's a big star.
It's funny. And then some people catch on and some people just don't.
But I can't understand Carson. I just I mean, I think I'm fairly smart at this stuff. I think
he's
about
not.
It a lot. I have no idea what this is about.
And
this,
he's the front runner. So
yeah.
Ben is he Carson's, the front runner?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Ben Carson's remarks on foreign policy have repeatedly raised questions about his grasp of the subject, but never more seriously than in the past week when he wrongly asserted that China had intervened militarily in Syria and then failed on national television to name the countries he would call on to form a coalition to fight the Islamic State. Faced with increasing scrutiny about whether Mr. Carson, who leads in some Republican presidential polls, was capable of leading American foreign policy, it has been said that he has struggled to master the intricacies of the Middle East and national security, and that the intense tutoring was having little effect. And who is saying that? His top advisors.
And one last thing. Joseph Cole wrote in and said, Jindal drops out, leaving 0% of the voters for other candidates.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 8 people have to find a new candidate. So what do we make of Carson? I mean, that is scary, isn't it?
He should be making some changes in his own campaign to begin with. Even if that were true, that's not the way to present it.
If he failed, I like that line, failing to master the intricacies of the Middle East. I think I would put that on
Rich,
about everybody who's dealing with the situation right now.
You're the Republican. Why is he the front runner?
Good
question.
I think he's struck a chord. And
what's that chord? C major minor.
You guys see him differently. I think he's not seen as a hater. Now you guys might see him that way, but I think a lot of people on the conservative side see him more as I know it's a stereotype, a uniter and not a divider. And I think that has struck a chord. Now, why the same chord is struck for Trump, who is a divider, not a uniter, I don't know, okay? But I think that's what people see.
I don't get it.
No. That's two of us, because yeah. I just am perplexed as to what this. People always say, well, it's the evangelicals, and that's why.
Or it's his gravitas, or it's his charisma. Yeah.
Or it's the fact that he could take a brain apart.
Now his wife is under attack. I'm enjoying that.
Well, not even. Okay, I just want to go back to what Alan said, because there was a great article in the Chicago Tribune over the weekend.
When do you sleep?
There's some question of how good he was at that.
Being a doctor?
Well, no, he's been attacked by that. He had that one major twin operation.
There were several twin operations, but none of them were, I mean, they were successful in that they lived, but they all live in institutions.
Oh, my gosh.
So, anyway, we're out of time, I want to thank everybody.
I want to thank Rich and Rosemary.
Our bulldogs. Thank you very much.